This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Back now to our coverage of Tom Menino's decision that he will not seek a sixth term as mayor of Boston. He's expected to make that announcement from Faneuil Hall in about 20 minutes. Here's the mayor, a little soft-spoken, a little subdued, speaking to reporters this morning.
It's been a great time. It's a changed city, and I'm glad that I've been a small part of this change city. It's 20 years, and remember when I started, the city was a boat, and today what it is, a city of vitality, a young city, between the age of 20 and 34, one in three Boston residents between the age of 20 and 34. Much different city than I took over.
Well, we're joined now by three people who know both Menino and his beloved city so well. Scott Lehigh, columnist for the Boston Globe. He joins us today from the State House. Hi there, Scott.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us today. Also with us in the studio is Peter Kadzis, former executive editor of the Boston Phoenix. Peter, hi there.
Hey, great to be here.
Also with us is Renee Loth, editor of Architecture Boston and columnist for The Globe as well. Renee, good to see you again.
Thank you.
Listeners, according to a Boston Globe poll, almost half of Bostonians have met the mayor personally. So we want to hear from you. What do you make of his decision not to run? What have the past 20 years been like with Menino at the helm? What's your favorite Menino memory? And what do you hope for the next generation of Boston political leadership? Share your stories at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Well, everybody, I'd just like to quickly get kind of first blush responses from you on what your thoughts were last night when all this news broke that the mayor wasn't going to run again. Scott, let's start with you.
Honestly, I'm not surprised. I haven't thought for some time that he would run. I haven't thought it makes much sense. I mean, the guy, he has been there for 20 years. He's done everything he needs to do or wants to do. I mean, that's a huge amount of time to be mayor. And his health is just not that good. He's not getting around that well. He would have to run a different way. And I think there are some troubling clouds on the horizon that you saw in our poll, and I think the other polls as well, saying a lot of people, they feel good about him, but they just don't think he should be running for re-election.
Peter?
Well, I'm glad the mayor had the sense not to run. I think among the clouds that are there is, during the time of his illness, people have been taking a closer look at his administration, which I should say, on the whole, is going to be very solid. But if my information is correct, and Scott, I'm not asking you to comment on this, but I understand the Globe Spotlight team is about to publish fairly soon a pretty lengthy set of articles about the BRA. Mm-hmm. And I think there'll be other pieces of close scrutiny about City Hall coming out. So if the mayor had run, it would have been a rockier race than he'd had in the past.
Mm. Renee, your thoughts?
I mean, I think this is a classic case of the spirit being willing but the body being weak. I mean, I have no doubt that if Mayor Menino were feeling better physically, that he would have run again. And I think he would have won again. I was editor of the editorial page of the Boston Globe during three of Menino's reelection campaigns, 2001, 2005, can I do the math, in 2009. And each time we endorsed him. And, we had our doubts and our misgivings, and there was a certain amount of Menino fatigue, that set in and all this. But, on balance, I think that he set a very high standard for any successor as we said, 57% of the people or whatever have met him personally. Mm-hmm. I think that he and even Ray Flynn before him have set a standard of expectation that the voters have for their mayors now, that a very personal, very direct involvement in the day-to-day life of the city.
It's interesting because for a lot of people, Mayor Menino's been the only mayor they've ever known. So
yes.
In terms of the scope of mayors and what they've laid down as expectations that voters might have is actually fairly narrow in Boston over past several generations. Scott, let me ask you briefly. Renee mentioned that the 2009 election, which was a hard-fought win for Mayor Menino. I wonder how much of that sort of held over and maybe compounded his health issues in terms of the total thinking that he had for going forward?
Hard to say. I mean, I think he didn't. I don't think he had that big a problem. That was Michael Flaherty and kind of the combination with Sam Yoon. I think John Connolly is a different candidate. He's more a new Boston figure, kind of more tapped into younger voters, comes out of a different place. I was surprised to watch him in the last council election in my neighborhood in Charlestown. He really he had a very substantial following, and people who aren't normally the kind of, you know, people you would see voting in a city election. So I think he did have something going. I mean, I'm not saying that scared the mayor out, but I do think there would have been, I do think there's some troubling clouds on the horizon for the mayor. I mean, this can change very quickly, and people, they like you, they feel good about you. But, you know, there's a sense that no one is indispensable, and he has been there for an awful long time. And as Renee says, the body wasn't really willing at that point. And from my mind, he's been an incrementalist, you know, someone who's been intent on preserving his political capital and his popularity, rather than doing some of the big important things the city needs. So I think it will be kind of a refreshing era for the city to have a wide open debate about the way we should go and to hear from different people and not have the discussion sort of stifled or chilled the way it has been by
Menino. Well, what Menino is, he's an interesting collision between circumstance and personality. I mean, during the 20 years he was mayor, the city of Boston's population grew, really for the first time in 40 years. Boston, only Washington, D.C. and Worcester, Massachusetts had greater population growth in the East. You say, why is that important? That brings people into the city. Growth equals vibrancy. As a result of that population growth, housing starts in the city increased by 8.2%. That meant even in the bad times, it was good for the economy. Menino's personality fit this because the people coming in were younger and more diverse. But Menino does not have, I believe, a prejudice bone in his body. And he connected with these newer Bostonians. I'm using the word in a slightly different way than Scott meant it. Mm-hmm. But with ethnics, with gays. But at the same time, he held on to the old white folks, like my dad, 89, living in Dorchester. So you have this essentially decent person in a circumstance when the city was changing, and it fit like a glove.
Renee?
I mean, I agree with that. I think that, you know, he was much more progressive as a mayor than we might have expected just looking at his resume, you know, the, you know, city councilor from Hyde Park and aide to Timelty and all this. And he was really quite progressive and a leader in the city's social attitudes, you know, towards gays and women and in New Bostonians, so-called the immigrants coming into the city. And he also, surprisingly, perhaps, you know, to look at him or to listen to him, you know, he really was interested in some of the cutting edge urban planning and urban sort of policy discussions that were going on around the country. He tapped into big data and how to use it to help citizens, you know, have more direct impact in the, you know, complaints about potholes or whatever it might be. You know, he had this sort of, what did he call it, the Office of New Urban Mechanics.
Right.
You know, he really was kind of forward-looking. He saw, of course, development possibilities on the waterfront. You know, so even though he's, you know, as I said earlier, a lot of us had, you know, cases occasionally of Menino fatigue, and he is 71 and so on, I think he really did pride himself on trying to stay cutting edge.
Listeners, we're talking about Mayor Tom Menino's decision to not run for a sixth term and to step down after 20 years as the mayor of the city of Boston. What's your reaction to his decision? What are your memories of how Boston has changed under Tom Menino's leadership? And what do you hope for the city's future? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I'm joined today by Scott Lehi, Peter Kadzis, and Renee Loth. And to all of you, I wanted to ask you quickly, Scott said a little bit earlier that, and the rest of you have somewhat reflected that oftentimes Menino was seen as an incrementalist who was really focused on the small details of the city, while he also did have some big plans as well. And that's a criticism or a question that others have asked him before in the past. For example, we've got a quotation here from a 1994 Globe magazine profile where, in response to that, the mayor was quoted as saying, "Sometimes we get caught up in the grandiose. Mm-hmm. My vision is jobs, a better school system, community policing, healthcare. And when I leave this job, I want the city to be in better shape than when I took it over. So, Renee, let me just start with you. In a way, the urban mechanic, isn't that what a city needs on a day-to-day basis, perhaps more than the grandiose visions?
Yeah, well, he would certainly say that. And I think the, you know, the legacy he leaves is one of incremental improvement, which over 20 years can really add up. I mean, I think that with the, I've lived in Boston, you know, more years than I want to say, 40 years. And I've been a property, you know, tax-paying resident of the city for over 20 years. And I've seen tremendous improvements in the way the city operates. What's missing, I think, and maybe this is a question of, you know, his not seeing things in a grandiose manner, or maybe it's about his own personality. But I do think what's missing is a kind of graduates of his administration, the kind of people we saw, you know, when Kevin White passed away.
Right.
Earlier, we talked a lot about the people he groomed and had come along, you know, Barney Frank and Fred Salvucci and Mitra Spring and Peter Mead and, you know, people who became leaders for the next generation of the city. And I don't see that in Menino. I don't know if that's a matter of his personality. You know, he doesn't really like to have other people show him up or what.
Well, I think some of that's
a different time. What is it?
Menino's a master political illusionist. I mean, he's better than White, better than Curley. Listen, Menino's way of governing was he gave three big speeches a year, the Chamber of Commerce, the Municipal Research Bureau, and the State of the City. I've been going over those in preparation for whether he ran or not ran. And he's essentially, in 20 years, made 600 promises or announced initiatives and all this. And I just took the last 3 years and went through it. You know, maybe if 2 or 3% of them ever came to fruition, but that's not what mattered. What it was is, on the one hand, he had offered these not bold initiatives, but, you know, these fairly interesting things. And so he'd be, this would be Tip O'Neill's blue smoke and mirrors over here. Then behind, so he's very Ronald Reagan, you know, setting aspirations for people. Then in private, he was a tough as nails political operator who had his hands on every lever of power. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean about him being an illusionist. And he was,
well,
I think.
But way too much, though, I think, Peter.
Oh, I agree.
In terms of the power. I mean, very petty and very, I mean, everything personalized and through him. And what I mean by the incremental approach here is, and look at the schools. I mean, he won early in his term the right to do pilot schools from the union to sort of more flexible schools with longer school days. Then a new union president came in and started sandbagging that. He negotiated for the authority again, got it again, and yet the union started resisting and undercutting it more in a subterranean way. Never really spoke out about that. Let him stymie that reform. This last year, we negotiated for 2 years, the city, to try to get a longer day in the public schools. The union dug in. He wasn't really willing to make that a public cause, just signed a contract that essentially locks you in for another 4 years with no additional time for kids in the public schools. So he left a lot of big things that needed to be done undone because he really wasn't willing to spend the political capital to wage the political fight for it. And I think it's really a shame that on something like that, that's that essential. I mean, one of the big things the city does, he just was not willing to really put his shoulder to the wheel with the force and the vocal expression that he needed to get the job done.
I'm really appreciating hearing all the clear-eyed political analysis here because, you know, I think to myself, like, when you look at a politician's actual record and career, these are the things that emerge. But on the other hand, the Globe poll shows him having a 74% popularity rating or approval rating in the city of Boston, which is, as Bob Oakes noted this morning on WBR, it's 10 times that of Congress.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a stratospheric number. So, you know, in terms of what voters think of him, at least now, it shows sort of the other side of the story. But in the last couple minutes we have, and it's really just a few minutes, I wanted to return to something that you've all mentioned, and that is the pent-up political talent in the city of Boston and what this moment means for them. Renee?
Oh, well, I think that we can't imagine how many people are going to run for this office now. I mean, I think there's going to be, I'd be very surprised if there are not another half dozen serious candidates who run for this office now. There is a lot of pent-up demand, a lot of pent-up political talent. The mayor did not groom anybody. He's not going to make an endorsement, you know. And I think that we're just going to see a real rock and roll kind of political campaign.
Scott?
I think I do expect there will probably be a half dozen people in it anyway. My question is, I mean, I've been somewhat impressed with John Connolly, the way he's come out of the box. He had the guts to get in and do this early. And we'll see. Will we see some big and more interesting figures? Is it just going to be another accumulation of city councilors? I think there's a real opportunity here. I think the city is changing. I think people want different things from city government, and particularly I think they want improvement in the schools. And it will be hugely interesting to see if you have an array of candidates who speak to that, or whether it's the usual kind of lower imagination people trying just to cobble together this neighborhood constituency and that.
Peter, what's your thought on that?
I've got my eye on, the so-called minority communities. And I say so-called because you put all the minorities together.
And they're the majority of the city of
Thank
Boston.
Thank you. Yeah. But I sense, while the average black and Hispanic voter, just to take two categories, have no problem voting for someone outside of their ethnic group, the movers and shakers in those communities want someone they can identify with. I mean, I've heard a lot of John Connolly's a pretty decent guy, and I've heard a lot of bad mouthing about him. But well, he's a white guy from West Roxbury, and I've said some of these people are friends of mine. I said, geez, if we said he's an Hispanic guy from Jamaica Plain, we'd be called racists. All of this is to say is I think the action is going to be in the minority communities, plural. Menino, one time years ago, we were in a green room together, and I said, do you think you're going to be the last white mayor of Boston? And he said, I think I will be.
So interestingly, it's my last thought here, that maybe we're seeing a moment of the coming in of age of the new Boston, so to speak, and perhaps Tom Menino was the man who helped get the city there.
That's right.
Maybe.
Well, on that note, I will say goodbye to Peter Kadzis. He's former executive editor of the Boston Phoenix. Peter, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Scott Lehigh, columnist for the Boston Globe, with us today from the State House. Scott, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And Renee Loth, editor of Architecture Boston and columnist as well for the Boston Globe. Always great to have you, Renee. Thanks so much. And listeners, just a reminder, at about 4 o'clock, so in a couple minutes, Mayor Menino is expected to speak. WBUR will carry his speech live. So stay tuned for that. By the way, Governor Deval Patrick tweets, Mayor Menino has become a valued partner to me on policy and politics and a trusted and beloved friend. And Thomas Connor writes on our Facebook page, Mayor Menino has been great. Thanks for your wonderful service. Good time to exit. Going out on top to applause. Listeners, let us know what you think of the mayor at radioboston.org. That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.